Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, we hear reports from Brian Lynn, Ashley Thompson, and me. Later, Alice Bryant brings us the Everyday Grammar Program. And we close the show with our American History Program, The Making of a Nation. But now, here is Ashley Thompson.
China is permitting more than 2,000 ethnic Kazakhs to surrender their Chinese citizenship and leave the country, the Kazakh Foreign Ministry said this week. The move may be a sign that China is feeling international pressure about its widespread detention of Muslims in the far western Xinjiang area. The detention of ethnic Uyghur, Kazakh, and other minorities in internment camps has caused tension between China and neighboring Kazakhstan. China is a major trading partner, and Kazakhstan's state-restricted media had mostly avoided reporting on the issue. But activists say pressure for action has slowly increased. Following an Associated Press story on the camps in May and other international media reports, the Kazakh Foreign Ministry has confirmed that China has agreed to let over 2,000 ethnic Kazakhs leave. It did not say who could leave or why they were able to leave. Those people will now be able to request Kazakh citizenship or permanent residency, Kazakh officials told the AP. The Chinese Foreign Ministry did not answer an AP request for comment. In recent years, Chinese officials have carried out a severe policing and detention campaign in the large, resource-rich Xinjiang region. Rights groups and experts have estimated that possibly 1 million people are being held in what China has called re-education camps. Former detainees have said they were forced to reject their culture and religion and subjected to political teachings.
News of the detentions has sent fear throughout the small, close community of Chinese-born Kazakhs now living in Kazakhstan. Many left China in the last few years to find better work or to educate their children in Kazakh schools as restrictions in Xinjiang increased. Hundreds lost contact with family members still there. Many began writing letters and attending press conferences. They hoped that greater publicity would help them find their relatives. Serik John Bilash is head of the advocacy group Atajurt. He said he senses a small change in the Kazakh government's position. He says that last year, officials warned him many times to end his activism activities. Now he says the warnings have stopped. He was even recently invited onto a popular Kazakh talk show. He says he felt the move was a sign of growing approval of his efforts to publicize the difficulties of detained Kazakhs. I said that Chinese officials are dangerous for Central Asia, for Kazakhstan, Bilash said. They're starting to accept my opinion now. While they have avoided criticizing China, Kazakh diplomats have worked to secure the release of their own citizens in Xinjiang. Foreign ministry officials said in November that China had detained 29 Kazakh citizens and 15 had since been released and permitted to enter Kazakhstan.
Thank you. A new study has found that about half of Hong Kong's young people would choose to live somewhere else if given the chance. The public opinion study was carried out last month by Chinese University of Hong Kong's Institute of Asia Pacific Studies. It found that overall, 34% of people in Hong Kong said they would choose to leave the territory to live elsewhere. More than 16% reported they had already begun making preparations to leave Hong Kong. The group with the most people who said they want to leave Hong Kong was between the ages of 18 to 30. 51% of this group said they would want to leave if given the chance. This compared to just 21% of people over age 50. The study found that nearly 48% of people with a college degree or higher said they would rather live somewhere else. About 25% of those questioned said growing political and social tensions in Hong Kong were major reasons they would seek to leave. Another 17% said they were dissatisfied with the political institutions. The most popular country people said they would like to move to was Canada, chosen by 19% of those questioned. 18% said Australia, and 11% said Taiwan. More than a third of those hoping to leave Hong Kong said they were seeking more living space. 22% hoped for better air quality and less pollution. About 15% said they were in search of more liberty and better human rights. Andrew Shum is a member of the Hong Kong-based human rights group Civil Rights Observer. He says one of the main reasons people want to leave Hong Kong is the government's failure to permit fully democratic elections. People's demand for universal suffrage has yet to be realized, Shum said. We had thought we were going to get a basic system that respected the choice of citizens through free and fair elections. Shum added that hopes for more democratic changes in Hong Kong had collapsed for many people. In 2014, parts of Hong Kong were shut down during 79 days of demonstrations held to protest Chinese plans to restrict fully free elections in Hong Kong. The Hong Kong government considered the demonstrations illegal and moved to end them. I'm Brian Lin.
Imagine that you are talking with a friend who lives overseas. You haven't seen or spoken to the person in a year, and he or she has much news to share. The friend talks for a long time, and you listen for a long time. But you want to tell them you have to go to work. How can you do it? You might need to interrupt them, but in a kind way. There are many reasons that interrupting a speaker or group of speakers may be necessary. They include to end a conversation, ask a question, give someone a message, or to join a conversation. The goal is to be able to do these things in a polite way.
In today's Everyday Grammar, we will share some language you can use. So let's return to our situation from the start of the program, the desire to end a conversation. There are times when we want or have to leave a conversation before a speaker finishes. In these situations, we can use one of these phrases. I'm sorry to interrupt, but... I hate to interrupt, but... Or, I'm sorry to cut this short, but... Here's how someone might use one of these in conversation.
So anyway, we get there, and as soon as...
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I have to be somewhere in an hour.
Oh, okay, no problem. Let's catch up more next week.
Note that when we interrupt a speaker for any reason, we almost always begin with sorry, I'm sorry, or, for some kinds of interruptions, excuse me. Now let's move to another common situation, the need to ask a question. There are times when we have a question about the subject of discussion or even an unrelated subject. Or we may want to make sure we've understood the speaker before they continue speaking. Here are two useful phrases for asking questions.
Sorry to interrupt, but may I ask a question?
I'm sorry for the interruption, but I have a quick question.
Or, here's what you can say to check that you've understood the speaker.
Sorry for interrupting, but I want to make sure I understand.
Then you can ask or state something to make sure you're clear on the speaker's meaning. Now let's hear how someone might use one of these phrases. Suppose the interrupter briefly walks into a meeting in progress.
Sorry for the interruption, but I have a quick question. What time do the exchange students get here?
They should be here by 2:30.
Great. I'll have their welcome packets ready by 12.
Note the very small differences in form between to interrupt, for the interruption, and for interrupting. All are common in American spoken English. In other situations, you may need to give someone a message that cannot wait, such as to inform them about a phone call or other time-sensitive issue. In giving such messages to people while they are speaking, we sometimes start with, excuse me.
Excuse me, Brian. There's a phone call for you on line one.
Sorry to interrupt, but you're needed in the lobby to sign for a package.
Note that the phrase, pardon me, is another way to say excuse me, but is less common except in very formal situations. And finally, there are times when you want to join a conversation between two or more people. Sometimes, this is easy to do because you're already friendly with the people and they are talking casually about a subject. Other times, the speakers are so deep in discussion that there are no natural breaks in their speech. But you still want to offer an opinion, make an important point, or share some information. These phrases can help you enter a conversation. Excuse me, but may I jump in here? Sorry to butt in, but... May or can I add something here? I couldn't help overhearing. I couldn't help overhearing means I couldn't avoid hearing what you said. Be careful to use this phrase only with people who would react kindly, such as friends or coworkers. Listen to a short talk between coworkers.
Did you catch the Golden Globe Awards? I was so happy to see Alfonso Cuarón win Best Director.
I know. Roma was a beautiful film.
I couldn't help overhearing you talk about Roma. I just watched it last night. Wow, What lovely cinematography.
So, you just learned how to politely interrupt other people. But what might you say if someone interrupts you? You can tell us in the comments area. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, our weekly program of American history for people learning American English. I'm Steve Ember in Washington. James K. Polk moved into the White House after his swearing in as the nation's 11th president on March 4, 1845. Polk told voters during the election campaign he would serve only one term as president. During those 4 years, he wanted to achieve or reach four main goals. Two of his goals related to money. Polk wanted to reduce taxes on imports and to establish an independent treasury. His other goals related to expanding the country to the Pacific Ocean. President Polk wanted to secure the Oregon Territory and California for the United States. Those who supported the president shared Polk's belief that the United States should extend from sea to sea, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. They felt it was God's will and their duty to spread American democracy and freedom across the continent. In the words of poet Walt Whitman, "It is for the interest of mankind that America's power and territory should be extended. The farther, the better." One way Americans wanted to extend the country was by making the Oregon Territory part of the United States. The territory included what are now the U.S. states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, as well as part of the Canadian province of British Columbia. American traders established claims to the Oregon Territory early in the country's history. But British explorers gave Britain claims to the same territory. The two countries could not agree on how to divide Oregon between them. Since few white settlers lived in Oregon, Britain and the United States agreed to occupy the area jointly. This joint occupation worked well until the 1840s. Then, thousands of Americans began moving west to Oregon. The new settlers wanted all of Oregon to belong to the United States. President Polk agreed. He thought the United States had strong claims to the entire territory, but he said he would compromise. He offered to divide Oregon at the 49th parallel of latitude. Everything north of this line would belong to Britain. Everything south of it, including the Columbia River, would belong to the United States. Britain's minister in Washington rejected the offer. He said Britain would accept nothing but the Columbia River as the southern border of British Oregon. President Polk said America had no choice then but to claim all of Oregon. He seemed to say the United States would fight, if necessary, to defend its claim. Polk did not really want war, but he thought he needed a strong position to negotiate with Britain. In London, the British government decided Oregon was not worth a war with the United States. After all, Britain had moved its trading center on the Columbia River north to Vancouver Island, so there was no real reason to demand rights to the use of the river. The British Foreign Minister proposed a treaty that would divide the territory at the 49th parallel of latitude. The proposal was almost the same that President Polk had made earlier. The United States accepted the proposal. The treaty made the 49th parallel the U.S. border from the Rocky Mountains to the Pacific Ocean. South of this was California. An American government minister once described California as the richest, the most beautiful, and the healthiest country in the world. The official said the port of San Francisco was big enough to hold all the navies of the world. He said someday San Francisco would control the trade of all the Pacific Ocean. There was only one problem.
It was owned by Mexico.
Historian Robert Mary wrote a book about James K. Polk. Mr. Mary says Polk wanted to bring California into the Union anyway.
So obviously he had some underlying ideas about how that might be done.
At first, the United States attempted to buy California from the Mexican government. But Mexican officials refused even to talk about selling California to the United States. When the U.S. Congress approved statehood for Texas in early 1845, Mexico broke relations with the United States altogether. President Polk ordered the commander of the U.S. Army in Texas, Zachary Taylor, to move his forces into the disputed area near the Rio Grande River. The river formed part of the border between Texas and Mexico. Polk sent a representative to Mexico in an effort to reestablish diplomatic relations. But the Mexican government refused to talk with the diplomat. General Taylor sent one of his officers across the Rio Grande to meet with Mexican officials. The Mexicans protested. They said the area across the river was Mexican territory. The movement of American troops there, they said, was an act of war. For almost a month, the Americans and the Mexicans kept their positions. Then, on April 25, 1846, General Taylor received word that a large Mexican force had crossed the border a few kilometers up the river. A small force of American soldiers went to investigate. They were attacked. All of the Americans were killed, wounded, or captured. General Taylor quickly sent a message to President Polk in Washington. It said war had begun. Taylor's message arrived at the White House on May 9th. A few days later, the president asked Congress to give him everything he needed to win the war and bring peace to the area. Some members of Congress did not want to declare war against Mexico. They believed the United States was responsible for the situation along the Rio Grande. They were outvoted. Later, Polk wrote, "We had not gone to war for conquest, but it was clear that in making peace, we would, if possible, get California and other parts of Mexico." Many Americans opposed what they called Mr. Polk's war. Whig Party members and anti-slavery abolitionists in northern states believed that slave owners and Southerners in Polk's administration had planned the war. They believed the South wanted to win Mexican territory for the purpose of spreading and strengthening slavery. The president was troubled by this opposition, but he did not think the war would last long. He thought the United States could quickly force Mexico to sell him the territory he wanted. So Polk secretly sent a representative to the former Mexican dictator, Antonio López de Santa Anna. Santa Anna was living in exile in Cuba. The representative said the United States wanted to buy California and some other Mexican territory. Santa Anna said he would agree to the sale if the United States would help him return to power. President Polk accepted the deal. He ordered the United States Navy to let the former dictator sail to the Mexican port of Veracruz. But once Santa Anna returned, he failed to honor his promises. He refused to end the war and sell California. Instead, Santa Anna organized an army to fight the United States. In 4 months, he built an army of 20,000 men. When General Taylor learned that Santa Anna was preparing to attack, he moved his forces to fight the Mexicans. Santa Anna sent a representative to meet with General Taylor. The representative said the Americans had 1 hour to surrender. Taylor's answer to Santa Anna was short. Tell him to go to hell. The battle between the United States and Santa Anna's army lasted 2 days. Losses were heavy on both sides. On the second night, the Mexican forces withdrew from the battlefield. Taylor had won. The victory strengthened Taylor's public image. He had already won the Battle of Monterrey, a major trading and transportation center in northeast Mexico. Other American forces also were victorious. General Winfield Scott captured the port of Veracruz and was ready to attack Mexico City. Commodore Robert Stockton invaded California and had raised the American flag over the territory. Stephen Kearny seized Santa Fe, the capital of New Mexico, without firing a shot. Still, the war was not over. President Polk's short war already had lasted for more than a year. Polk decided to send a special diplomatic representative to Mexico. He asked the diplomat to negotiate a peace treaty whenever Mexico wanted to stop fighting. A ceasefire was declared, but attempts to negotiate a peace treaty failed. Santa Anna used the time to prepare for more fighting. So General Scott ended the ceasefire. His men began their attack on Mexico City. The fighting lasted 1 week. Finally, the government of Mexico surrendered and Santa Anna left power. On February 2, 1848, the United States and Mexico signed a peace treaty. Mexico agreed to give up California and New Mexico, and Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande as the southern border of Texas. The war was officially over. But historian Robert Mary says President Polk suffered because of the conflict. The war with Mexico, Mary says,
ended up being a much longer war than he had anticipated and much more costly in terms of lives, in terms of money, and in terms of his political standing.
The war with Mexico also influenced the U.S. election in 1848.
And that's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.
VOA.